everything today on the Fantasy Smorgasbord. What do you think about that name, that title for a show?
Smorgasbord is a good word. I like it.
Yeah, I like smorgasbord a lot, and we are going to give you a little bit of everything, so it is a smorgasbord. I think the only, like, people need to feel like they got so much fantasy baseball they just couldn't take any more at the end of this.
Okay, well, I hope that's, you know, I'm not exactly sure I agree with that, but...
Oversaturated with fantasy baseball. It's oozing out of the pores.
Right. We got, you know, we got a little roast beef, a little corned beef, a little pastrami, nice little smorgasbord, a lot of options here.
Like, we're going to,
you know, players we love, AL only, NL only, ADP, a little bit of ADP, one of the worst team names I've ever seen in my life, pitching strategy, rankings, buy or sell, your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and if you want to download the theme song, we'll give you the URL to go do that. If you haven't heard it, it's like 4 minutes long, the full version. You should get in on that. So, hey, let's do another player we love, different from your Valentine. That was special. That was Valentine's Day. This is like your weekend crush, okay? You know, I went with Gerrit Cole. I was deciding between two Pirates. I went with Gerrit Cole. My other player that I love is Gregory Polanco. I'm a Pirates guy this year. And I really want Polanco. I'm just gonna leave it at that. I think he's got, without question, top 10 upside. And, yeah, I think I might have to reach a little bit, but I actually like the value I've been seeing for Polanco, but I think he's gonna be better than McCutcheon. I think he's gonna be better than Christian Yelich. So he's my guy, Gregory Polanco. Heath, how about you? You had Blake Snell on Valentine's Day. Who do you love now?
And Blake Snell was more of the fling for me. I'm going to go back to my true love now that the holiday season is over.
Oh.
And I'll go with Kelvin Herrera.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, let's get back to,
man,
to my true...
he turned his back on Snell so quickly.
True emotion. And I think if you just look at Herrera peripherally last year, if he can come anywhere close to duplicating that, he's the 15th reliever off the board right now in fantasy drafts.
What?
He has top five potential. I rank him at 10th, and I feel like that's too low.
But Heath, he never had the strikeout rate before last year. Aren't you the...
Nope.
If he never did it before last year,
because,
that's not...
Because there's an explanation. He developed a new slider going into last year and had a higher whiff rate on that slider.
You buy the explanation for him.
But... Had a higher whiff rate on that slider than Noah Syndergaard. He already had a blazing fastball. You put the slider with it, he's just nearly unhittable.
To be clear, I'm not arguing against Kelvin Herrera. I think he has top five potential too. I just think you're being enticed by the KC on his hat, because if this was some other relief pitcher X with this same explanation,
well,
I don't know that you'd buy it.
There are certain explanations. I'm not Chris. I don't just disregard all actual baseball explanations and only look for numerical explanations.
Okay.
By the way, you can't spell KC without K.
That's correct.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, you know who else didn't develop a slider, but someone who adjusted his delivery on his slider, which may have led to more strikeouts? Guy we're going to talk about a little bit later in our rankings disputes, Justin Verlander. A little teaser for later on in the show. Scott, you better go with the inspiration for this segment. You better go with who you tweeted about yesterday. Who's the player you love?
Okay, good. I was wondering if I could do the my Valentine's Day flirtation. I didn't actually pick him on Valentine's Day. I picked James Paxton, but I am going with Mitch Haniger, because it seems like every week the Mariners are just completely fawning over him. Yesterday there was an article by all the Seattle beat writers, the player in Mariners camp who has made the best impression early on. And Scott Service, their manager, said it was Mitch Haniger, citing his very professional approach, the plan he has every time he's in the batter's box. Like, it's just normal spring BS, but it's like always about this guy over and over again since Jerry DePoto acquired him in a deal where he wasn't even the headliner. He looked like just a throw-in in that Gene Segura deal, but they love this guy. And it's making me think we should love him even more. And there's plenty of reason to love him aside from that. I was wondering why we didn't hear more about him when he was in the D-backs organization last year. 999 OPS in the minors, had the most eye-popping numbers probably of any minor league hitter, was an ex-prospect in the Brewers organization who tweaked his stance a couple years ago, modeled it after A.J. Pollock and Josh Donaldson.
Had a conversation with Reggie Jackson.
Okay, I don't know about that, but I think you're just throwing that in.
I'm
but
just throwing change.
That's
actual
Kepler.
Mechanical changes, Heath, not just some conversation
oh, okay.
with some famous dude.
Listen, Mitch Haniger in a really deep league is exciting.
I don't know that you have to draft him in a three outfielder league, but
no.
I think I will keep very close eye on the him on the waiver wire, and if he goes, you know, 4-for-10 with a homer his first two games, I'm probably picking him up.
Mitch Haniger is a good plug for the feature we have in our leagues called the scout team. Put him on the scout team, and then you'll get notifications when Mitch Haniger does things, and then you know when to pick him up.
All right, let's see how many times Heath can plug the greatness of CBSSports.com today. That is one. This is not
okay.
something that you usually do, but this is a fun Friday contest. Let's see how many times you can seamlessly talk about how great our website is.
Oh, fantastic. No problem.
All right, that's one. Now let's talk about the worst thing I've seen in a long time. Heath was tweeting team names, rapid fire team names yesterday, and this was like, I don't even get it. I mean, I kind of get it, but Yasmani Money Tomas Problems as like, okay, worst. That's the worst team name I've ever seen. Explain what was going on there.
Well, you don't want me to explain the whole thing to you, because that was quite of a mess. Well, okay, just to be clear, maybe this would be a good opportunity to clarify that, like, if I don't like your team name, I'm not trying to personally insult you. I still like you. I appreciate you listening. I'm sorry that you didn't have a good team name, or that I just didn't feel like laughing at it at that moment. But yeah. Yasmani Money Tomas Problems is obviously an ode to Mo Money Mo Problems.
Sort of. Somehow.
Yeah,
it's ode. Like, yeah, Mitch Money Haniger Problems, ode to Mo Money Mo Problems.
No, Mini Money Moss Problems.
Right.
Clearly,
yeah.
It fits. It's excellent. I'm going to use it on one of my teams.
Excellent.
This year.
Now, what the pro? Like, I feel like I'm usually the one who doesn't like the team names people suggest on this show, but I think the difference is, I don't like my own team names either, at least when I try for the wordplay like that. I think it's very hard to come up with something original and legitimately funny.
Like 95% of your team names are wordplays off your own name.
Yes, because at least, but I don't think they're good.
Yeah.
I do think,
it's easier to do with white.
It's when somebody forces me to come up with a team name and I want to, people to easily identify that team belongs to me. Yes, I try and put my last name, and white is easy to work into different things. But you know, usually, I don't know. It's just difficult. I usually reject my own too, and usually end up going with something. If I don't go with a play on my own name, something completely ridiculous, like a name I've used a couple times in football leagues is Downtown with Cade McNown and the Upside Down Frown Clown, which is not.
Much worse than Yasmani Money Tomas.
It's pretty bad.
But it's just completely absurd and too long and like not even caring.
Yeah. And I'm going to be all about Dansby Samsonite this year. That's going to be if I can't think of a team name in one of my leagues, I'm going defaulting to Dansby Samsonite, which I think is pretty brilliant for you Dumb and Dumber
the
fans.
The thing that I love about CBS Sports is that you put in your team name and then you can actually add a photo
yeah.
to go with it.
It sure
and
is.
That pulls the whole thing together.
It does. That
That's
helps
two.
A lot. You can save a not so great team name with a terrific logo to go with it.
All right, back to the smorgasbord. Tweet of the day from Morning Mitzvah. With the amount of home runs, you know, with the home run increase, would you say that means that you should go for a pitcher? All caps from Morning Mitzvah. A pitcher early. More home runs. Does that mean we should prioritize pitching?
You know, I was looking at the average draft position on CBS, and it's an excellent tool that helps you to figure out where people are going to be drafted on the website. And it seems like people are doing that because pitchers are way, way up there. Now, it doesn't have anything to do with that. I don't believe this would make you go pitcher early. I understand why. Like, if you think the home run trend is going to continue, and there's the few elite pitchers that don't get bit by that makes them more valuable. I have a really hard time buying the whole narrative.
I actually feel like this is a trend. I'm going to take the opposite stance that it started even before last year. And I don't know that it's directly tied to home runs, but it does seem like the gap between the high end pitchers and the kind of middling pitchers is widening. I thought it was most extreme actually 2 years ago when Scherzer, Greinke, Arrieta, and Kershaw, they all had, all four of them in the same year had like historically low whips, even though offense even that year was on the rise. And then I think we all felt it a lot last year when we were struggling to find, you know, that to fill that third or fourth spot in our rotation. So I do that. That's kind of why I've changed my approach to pitching in the last couple years. And I am more willing to grab a couple from that top 15 group when in the past I might have not drafted a single top 15 pitcher. I just think it's even if you do find a breakout midseason, he's just not going to get the innings or the strikeouts to compare to the real high end pitchers.
Now, my strategy with pitching has changed a little bit too. I'll just talk about sort of the later rounds. And I just want to say next week, my plan next week is outfield on Monday and Tuesday, parts 1 and 2. Chris will be back on Wednesday. I'm hoping to do a live mock draft with listeners on the air on Wednesday. That's the plan right now. And then Thursday and Friday, starting pitcher part 1 and part 2. Hopefully we won't have any breaking news at that point. But what changed so much last year, I don't know if it's going to be the same this year, is that you used to be able to find pitchers on the waiver wire throughout the season so easily. Yep. But last year really wasn't the case. It was more like you could find hitters on the waiver wire. So my late round picks now are typically hitters. And I'd like to fill out my pitching staff, or almost all of my pitching staff, including reserves, by like, I don't know, round in a 21 round draft, like round 16. Maybe 17. And not wait so long for my high upside guys. That's just kind of the way I'm adjusting to what happened last year. I found it much easier to find hitting than pitching. So it didn't necessarily change the starts of my drafts, but the middles and the ends, it changed. As hitting has gotten deeper and pitching seems shallower.
Well, if you're doing that, though, doesn't it make sense to combine it with taking pitchers early? If like your bench options are going to be hitters, that's kind of to safeguard against the less secure hitters you're drafting by not
No, Scott, not necessarily my bench options are going to be hitters.
Okay.
I just might fill starters at some hitter spots later. Maybe I'll have
So you're thinking more a roto lineup with all those hitter spots to fill.
I agree with what you said as well. I just was Yes. I am combining sort of your approach and what I said, we can talk about that next week. If I don't get two pitchers that I really like two top, I don't know, 15, 16 pitchers, then I'm going to go heavy with the Gerrit Cole, Masahiro Tanaka, Julio Teheran. I'm not sure which ones I favor yet.
To. Yeah.
I'm going to go heavy in that. I don't want to go to get like my third and fourth guys. I don't want to go much further than that.
Right.
I am prioritizing it more this year. That's bottom line. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Injuries, news, and notes. We only have one injury, new, and note. The Major League Baseball, we know about the intentional walk thing. They may raise the strike zone next season. They might implement a 20-second pitch clock. You should read Bob Nightingale's story in USA Today with some player reaction to it. But I wonder how much the pitching landscape will change the baseball landscape, fantasy landscape would change if they change the strike zone next year. And maybe people in Dynasty or Keeper League should keep that in mind. What do you guys think?
If we're talking about raising the strike zone at the top and the bottom, I'm all for it. It'd be great if they would call the strike zone as it's defined in the rules. It'd be much easier to do with robot umpires. But I am afraid they only want to raise the bottom of the strike zone and take away the low strike, and they're still not going to call the top of the strike zone like they're supposed to. And that would be very bad, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that would be more walks. That would slow the pace of games. That would probably change what we perceive to be a low whip. But, I mean, that's if they just raise the bottom and not the top. If they raise the whole thing, Like, it, these are obviously, I don't even know how actionable this is because it's so just theorizing. But I think part of the explanation for why we've seen home runs increase the last couple years is because hitters have just over time gotten better. Than the new generations of hitters have been better at hitting the low strike. So if the low strike is no longer a strike, then suddenly everybody's having to adapt to that again, hitters as well. So I that might change things too.
Let's just do less commercials.
Yeah, I agree.
And instead have more like a soccer model where you just have ads on during the broadcast, where we've got ads on uniforms, and the time will be cut.
Actually, I am so opposed to ads on uniforms, but if it meant shortening the commercial breaks, I think I might give in.
And not changing actual rules.
Yes, that would be much better.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna take something off the smorgasbord. We were gonna do some infield ADP review. We're gonna skip that. Let's go right to buy or sell from the Twitterverse. This is from Mike Steinitz. Buy or sell, John Gray will be a top 30 pitcher in points leagues. Or Roto. I'm going to throw Roto in there too, Mike. John Gray, top 30 pitcher.
I will sell. It's easier to buy in points leagues. I think Coors Field, ERA, and WHIP, that's going to be a tough hurdle for him to overcome.
I will sell, but I think he's really... I've got him as a top 36 pitcher, so he's just outside. I think it's well within the range of possibilities.
Boy, was he bad at the end of last season. John Gray had a 6.41 ERA in his last 10 starts, home and road struggles. What did you make of that? Was that a big concern for you?
No, that seems like what you often see from a pitcher just breaking into the big leagues. I am encouraged by the way he performed the first 4 months or so. I think there's a chance he can be the second pitcher to clear that Coors Field hurdle ever after Ubaldo Jimenez. Okay. But I'd still bet against it.
Yeah, I got one more stat for you on John Gray. He made 5 starts against the Padres. He threw more innings against the Padres than any other opponent, 33 innings. He had a 2.73 ERA. He had 4 amazing starts and 1 terrible one. 5 walks, 49 strikeouts, and 33 innings. So boy, did he take advantage of the Padres. But, you know, they're still
in this
division.
They'll be even worse this year, right?
They're going to be bad, no doubt.
Yep.
All right, RJ says, buy or sell, the Cubs repeat as champs.
Oh, buy, 100%. The only way they don't is if the Royals beat them in the World Series.
The only way they don't. The Red Sox have closed the gap, I think, between the two teams. But I'll still buy the Cubs. I'm kind of beyond the point where I pick a team to win just to be different. I'll just pick who I think the best team is, and I think the Cubs are the best team.
Hey, the Indians. I mean, the Indians deserve a little love here.
They're better, too.
They are better. Yeah. All right, buy or sell from Cody. Buy or sell Max Scherzer's injury.
Buy that he has an injury?
Sell that the injury is something we should care about.
There you go.
I have downgraded him a little bit. Not quite below Bumgarner, but I'm really close.
Okay. Now, Scherzer, I think he threw off a mound recently. He's making progress. He has a broken knuckle on his finger, and he is not guaranteed to be ready for opening day, but they certainly have not ruled it out. All right, from Julian Alexander, buy or sell Justin Verlander being top 5 in strikeouts?
K per 9, K percentage, or total Ks?
Seems like total Ks. Verlander top 5, buy or sell?
I think he's got a good chance at that. I'll sell, but he's not far off.
I'll buy. And what Heath was getting at is, I mean, the guy's going to pitch so many innings that he doesn't even need to quite match last year's K per 9 to do that.
Career high K per 9 for Justin Verlander last year. Of course, you know, more strikeouts around baseball will help. This one's from me. Buy or sell, red apples are better than green apples.
Sell.
I'll buy it.
Yeah, I'm going to buy it, too. I decided yesterday, officially. I was eating a green apple. I had recently eaten a red apple. I'm a red apple guy.
Couldn't disagree more. Sour and sweet is the best flavor combination.
If you want, like, candy at the movie theater, I agree. If you want an apple, I just prefer sweet.
I'm not really much of an apple guy.
Okay.
Well, that's a little more trouble than it's worth.
That's on you. This is from Edward. Buy or sell Manny Machado scoring more head-to-head points than Chris Bryant?
Sell. I also sell.
From Owen, buy or sell Aaron Nola avoiding major injury to post a mid-3 ERA, a 1.1 whip, and 170 Ks in 180 innings. Aaron Nola, mid-3s, 1.1 whip, 170 Ks in 180 innings.
Seems a little specific, but I can have if I can have like at least 170 Ks in at least 180 innings, I'll buy.
Yeah, like those Nola. Seem like reasonable expectations. I buy. If Chris was here, he'd probably sell hard, but you got the two Nola believers, so
okay.
We'll buy.
What does Chris have against Nola?
There's no love lost between Chris and Aaron Nola.
he's less willing to attribute Nola's collapse to, I think, physical conditions. And I guess the main thing is he doesn't like that he doesn't get swinging strikes on the level a pitcher with his K per nine should.
Okay. From Sean Perry, buy or sell Steven Strasburg pitches 200 innings.
A sell.
Yeah, I think you have to sell.
It's only done it once.
Right.
From John Seeley, when I get the fifth pick, I always find myself taking Arenado over Goldschmidt. Buy or sell, Nolan Arenado finishes higher overall than Paul Goldschmidt.
Buy, 100%.
Yeah, I think we would all take Arenado over Goldschmidt, though. Roto, it's a little tougher because Goldschmidt gives you the steals and Arenado doesn't. I still think I'd take Arenado first in that format.
I will say, Arenado... Now, the only way you can really compare is fantasy points, but it's still relevant even for Roto. Arenado scored 35 more fantasy points than Goldschmidt last season. That's pretty significant. But in 2015, Goldschmidt scored 54.5 more fantasy points than Arenado. Arenado, the big difference for Arenado was the runs scored, and the walk-to-strikeout ratio got a lot better in 2016.
I do want to say, if you want to compare past 2015, you can go to CBS Sports. We've got three-year averages on the stats page, and you can see what their average fantasy points over the last 3 years are.
I don't know how I feel about the walk-to-strikeout ratio with Arenado, because like, if you look at... This is very specific, but if you look at two of his last 3 months... He had a terrible walk-to-strikeout ratio, or a bad walk-to-strikeout
ratio. Two of his last three months.
I think that's looking a little too deep. I think it's just a trend of Arenado is now recognized as an offensive force by opposing pitchers, so they're more careful with him. I don't think he's a naturally high walker, but he'll become more that just because of how careful pitchers are being with him.
I think it's interesting that you like apples so much when you enjoy cherry-picking stats like you do.
Wow.
I like cherries too.
Wow, that was pretty good.
Riot in St. Louis. Happy Friday, Vern, Vin, and Brent.
Outstanding announcers.
Oh, they're retired. That's right, they all retired. Buy or sell between Yasiel Puig and Ulieski Gurriel, one will finish in the top 20 at their respective positions. Between Puig and Gurriel, do we have a top 20 outfielder or third baseman?
Yazi, sell.
Between the two, and only top 20, top 20 is all Gurriel has to crack. I mean, I feel like Gurriel is a pretty good bet to be a top 20 third baseman.
Yeah,
it just might be one of those situations where it's barely top 20, and you'd rather have the guy who got hurt and finished outside the top 20 because of what he does per game. So I will buy that one of those two will be top 20 at their position.
Okay, so Heath, you say Yasi sell and Gurri sell?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Hey, you're a serious fantasy baseball player. You out there listening. It's time to step up your game. Start playing on CBSSports.com, right, Heath?
It's the best website there is for fantasy baseball, football, basketball.
I'm not going to count that because it wasn't seamless, but you will not find a better platform. No matter how you play, there's a game style for you. Start a league with custom rules, you can compete for cash in a prize league, or you can create or join a free league with standard scoring. On CBS Sports, you're going to get exclusive roster tools, instant access to the latest advice. If something's breaking, you're going to get instant advice from Scott, from Heath, from Chris, from all of our experts. So start playing today, CBSSports.com/baseball. CBSSports.com/baseball. By the way, when I say something's breaking, I don't mean the website, I mean like breaking news. Website's not going to break. People want auction advice. So instead of reading a few emails about that, I'm just going to say people want auction advice. So back to the smorgasbord.
Yeah.
Let's give some auction advice. It's very tough.
Yo, I think the first thing you want to do is if you go to CBSSports.com on our rankings page, you can actually see our auction values and what we would suggest. And those are calculated to fit perfectly with a $260 auction budget, no matter what type of league you're in.
Right, 260. So adjust based on a $260 budget. That's five references. Good job. We've previewed infielders. We're going to get to outfielders and starting pitchers. But let's say someone was doing an auction for the first time. What would you tell them, Scott White?
I think the most important thing I could tell them, and this would apply if you're doing an AL, NL, or mixed, because some of the advice would vary depending on the format, but this applies to all of them. You want to avoid being the guy who gets down to only $1 bids. That's all you have left, because then you're forced to sit there. And the only chance you can get a player is when you nominate him. And if anybody wants to bid $2 on him, you're out of luck. You have to wait through the whole rest of the nomination order to have a chance at another guy.
Ugh,
all the while,
brutal.
Good players are going off the board. And it's a pretty helpless feeling. You end up being overly creative sometimes with the players you nominate, and maybe even nominate a guy less worth less than a dollar just because you want to win somebody. It's really frustrating. So what I do is, certainly by the point it dwindles down to where I have twice as many dollars as I have spots to fill, I just stop bidding. Like, even if my max bid is like 10 at that point, I don't go above 2. Maybe I'll stretch it to 3 if it's a player I really, really want. I try and jump in there right away when somebody nominates that guy for a dollar and go 2 or 3. But that's the absolute highest I'm willing to go, because I need to make those last few dollars last. I need to be the guy making the other people mad that I'm outbidding them on their dollar nominations.
I will cover the nomination part of it, assuming this is somebody's first time in an auction. In the first part of the auction, whenever it's your turn to nominate, I always try to nominate the guy that I think is the most expensive player that I don't want, to get that money spent. And then once you've got past that point, I try to nominate players. If I already have my first baseman, I want everybody to get their first baseman or second baseman or whatever. Spend other people's money on expensive players that you don't want. And then the other thing, late in the during the time Scott was talking about, if you're in a position where you don't want to spend more than $2 on players, when you nominate, if it's a guy that's a borderline $2 player and you want him, just nominate him for 2. Because you nominate him for 1, somebody's going to quickly spend 2, and then you don't want to go 3.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't even know that I would do that, because, well, okay, that's a fair point. I don't feel like it happens a lot in my auction experience that people go straight to 2 when I want a guy for 2. I guess the idea for me is you can't be too attached to one particular player at that stage of the
draft. Right, but if it's a $2 player, I want this guy.
I would rather nominate a guy for a dollar that I'd be okay getting for a dollar, but that I don't desperately want, and let somebody else spend the $2 or $3.
The beauty of auctions is I can get my guys, and so I would rather nominate the guy
I don't think late is the way to do that, though.
No? You can disagree with that.
If you're so committed to one guy at the end game of the auction, that's how you end up blowing $5 when you can really only afford
I'm just saying nominate him for 2, and then if somebody else wants to play 3, they can have him.
Okay.
Yeah, and there are a lot of guys you're going to want. You know, you'll see. So a couple more things, or a few more things on auctions. One, yes, go to the website, look at the auction values. 2, do not be locked into them. Auctions are tough to preview on a podcast because everyone is just a different beast, and guys are going to go for different values every time. So you can't be too rigid. You have to be flexible. You have to adjust. Last year, I didn't do a good enough job adjusting. People were spending a lot more on hitting than I was willing to do. And I got left out. I think my most expensive player was AJ Pollock, but, I should have just realized the trends in the draft and in the auction and adjusted to them. And instead I left myself with inferior hitting because I was too locked into, this guy's too expensive. I'm not spending on that. When you see too many guys come off the board and they're too more expensive than you thought, you have to realize, okay, there's going to be bargains at pitching. There's going to be bargains later in the draft. I have to adjust. I have to start spending.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's really the best application of auction values isn't, okay, I think I can get this guy for the dollar amount Heath says. It's if you're looking at Heath's auction values and players are consistently going for less than Heath has them for, then that means those players down that Heath has down in the $3-4 range are more likely to go for $7 or $8. Right. So you need to plan accordingly. If you don't want those guys for $7 or $8, then maybe the time to buy is on those expensive players who are going for less.
Yeah. And I always find the best values seem to be in the middle of an auction, and those end up being like fourth, fifth round picks. Because typically the best players get nominated early, and the $1 players are later. And everybody, you know, a lot of people like to either spend a lot early or save a lot for late so they can get values. But I find a player like Yoenis Cespedes or Kyle Seager, those are the ones you can get a lot of really good value on. That's just kind of the way I've seen auctions play out. And I don't like to be too aggressive early. I like to dominate in the middle of an auction. I feel like that's when you'll get a player and people are like, oh man, great value, Adam. I wish I hadn't spent this much more on a player in the same position. So
I don't remember that ever happening.
No, it happens all the time, regularly. Anything else on auctions?
Oh, there's so much more on auctions, but probably not worth getting into.
Be flexible. Be flexible.
Yep. This will not be the last time we talk about auctions. Absolutely not. We'll talk about our favorite like $1 bids, things like that, how to do pitching and hitting. I don't know that any of us are willing to spend that much on closers. But that's, you know, that's a long discussion. Back to the smorgasbord. We did AL only and NL only drafts. We did NL only yesterday. We did AL only on Tuesday. I was not part of that one. These were 10 team leagues. And quick AL only observations, guys.
I would say starting pitcher, I mean, this is always the case in AL. It's the higher scoring league. So, it's not, starting pitching isn't as strong generally as the NL. And you see people gravitate toward the higher end pitchers earlier because of it. I think 7 of the first 20 picks were starting pitchers in our AL only head to head draft. Wasn't like that in the NL. Should be like that in the NL.
I went 3 starting pitchers, I think, in my first 6 picks, and then didn't take one again until like one of the last 3 rounds.
I feel like with these league-specific formats, part of the reason why I'm paying up for pitchers in mixed leagues in a way I haven't done always is because there are so many more of them that you know your competition is always going to have one or two themselves. So that makes it you pretty much have to just to keep pace. When it's divided between two leagues like that, it's kind of like the old standard for how many aces there were in fantasy baseball, and not all your opponents are going to be as strong at the top. So you don't necessarily have to be either. I wasn't necessarily part of that run in the AL draft, but I do understand it, and maybe if it played out a little differently, I'd be happy to take an ace myself.
Okay, any other American League thoughts, positions that seem weaker, stronger? You know, like
second base seemed a little deeper.
DH makes first base a little easier, too, I think.
Second base is so much deeper in AL-only leagues, I think.
Kipnis is the 8th best in my rankings, which seemed crazy compared to the other positions.
Yeah, going to the National League-only draft. You might want to prioritize catcher a little bit. This is a 10-team league, and some of the catchers that are starting are Devin Mesoraco, Heath as Cameron Rupp, Tom Murphy, who we figure we better in Roto. We just don't know how many plate appearances he's going to get. Chris Herman. So, I mean, the catchers really stink. After Posey, there's a huge drop-off. I think in any AL-only or NL-only league, you might want to avoid having too much risk on your roster. Like, I have Giancarlo Stanton. I thought it was a good value. But later in the draft, I'm deciding between Yasmani Tomas and JT Realmuto. In a mixed league, I take Tomas 10 out of 10 times. But in this NL only, Yasmani Grandal, excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm deciding between Grandal and Realmuto. In a mixed league, I always take Grandal. In an NL only league, I took Realmuto just because I can't have too much injury risk on my team. I also felt that first base was pretty strong in NL only.
See, I was really disheartened by first base after, like, the first half of it's really strong. But then there is a huge drop-off between those of us that are starting Tommy Joseph, Brandon Belt, Adrian Gonzalez, and Travis Shaw at first base.
Yeah, I agree. It depends on how you define strong. It's like there's a drop-off, but at least it's not like shortstop where I'm starting Ketel Marte, who might not even start. You know, at least you've got a guy like Travis Shaw that you can fall back on and get
but
a starter.
You did that to yourself by not taking a short. Like there were more than 10 shortstops taken before Marte, right?
You know happened? Somebody auto-picked Brandon Crawford. He was going to be my starting shortstop, and somebody auto-picked him as like the third shortstop on his team.
I know Dansby Swanson went late, and I like late enough that I thought about taking him as my utility player. So.
He went in round 9. Peraza went in round 10. Baez went in round 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that's
keep in mind.
I wanted to underline a point you were making, Adam, because it's probably the biggest point to stress when you're talking about a league specific format versus a mixed league. You have to be safer with your picks. I'm all about going crazy for upside in a mixed league where you know there's always going to be competent options to fall back on in the waiver wire. But in these league specific formats, like if you miss at a position, you might just be screwed there all season long. So you need to play it safer. I found myself particularly in this NL1 drafting a lot of old boring players in the middle to late rounds, just because I feel like I can count on them being there in my lineup.
All right, let's do some rankings disputes as the smorgasbord continues here, and we'll do emails after this. Looking at, and we're going to do outfielders and a starting pitcher since we haven't previewed them yet. Heath has Starling Marte as his number 9 outfielder in Roto, ahead of Ryan Braun, Giancarlo Stanton, JD Martinez, and Nelson Cruz. That's Marte 9th, ahead of Braun, Stanton, JD Martinez, and Cruz. Scott has Marte 13th, behind all 4 of those guys. Hit it! Heath, you can lead it off with your defense of Starling Marte 9th.
We'll start with what he gives you in stolen bases, I guess. Like, I don't know. I know it was expected that Marte's home runs were going to come down last year. 9 is too low. 46 RBI is way too low. He's going to be better in those two categories. I don't know if he steals 47 bases or not, but 30 to 40 is, of course, the expectation with him. He's going to be around 290 to 300 as a hitter. He feels safe to me, and there's upside.
I just don't want him. And in a way, it kind of goes against a lot of what I've said because I feel like batting average and stolen bases are two categories you have to fill early, and those are the two categories you can trust Marte to excel in. But I think there are enough players who also hit home runs, and knowing the threshold I have to meet at home runs is even higher this year. Maybe Marte will bounce back with like 15 home runs.
Yeah,
maybe.
14 to 15 seems about right for an expectation.
But for an early round outfielder, I just don't know that that's enough. And now if it's the third round and my first two picks were like Bryant and Encarnacion, then maybe Marte is a great pick to balance it out. But more often than not, I'd rather not be in that position.
All right. Next rankings dispute. Scott has Adam Jones ahead of Gregory Polanco. What? You idiot. And, Heath likes Polanco better. I'm going to say this. Here we go. Ready? Hot-ish take. Adam Jones could be a total bust. He is not that good anymore. He was the number 26 outfielder in points in Roto last year. He never steals bases. His batting average has been in the 260s 2 years in a row. His home runs don't really stand out anymore. He hits, you know, about 29, 30 every year. What does he do? His double, he hits like very few doubles now. So even that just shows that he's declining. I don't know. I have no interest in Adam Jones if he's going to be a top 20 outfielder. Gregory Polanco will be worlds than Adam Jones.
He may. I mean, he was better in terms of points per game last year. I guess I'm not as convinced that Jones is in a true decline here as opposed to just some random fluctuation in, you know, particularly with the batting average. And if the batting average goes up, you know, there's going to be hits that go along with that in points leagues. More than anything, though, I just feel like he's steady and reliable. And Gregory Polanco, I mean, just looking at last year. He did finish with more points per game overall, but it was so front loaded. Like I still don't feel like I have a clear idea of what kind of player Gregory Polanco is. And that makes me less likely to make him like my fallback number one outfielder when I could live with Jones as my number one outfielder if I missed out on the really high end options.
I thought I loved Adam Jones. I do like Adam Jones. I just can't like him more than Gregory Polanco. I expect Polanco to be a 2020 guy that's right around 80 runs, 80 RBI, walks a decent amount, doesn't strike out too much. And I still, and this is anti-Heath, since Scott gave a little bit of an anti-Scott take earlier. He's got 1,500 plate appearances now of a 294 BABIP. I can't figure out why he has a 294 BABIP or how he's going to maintain that for his career. I expect him to have a year where he hits closer to 270 or 280 in the near future.
Yeah, that is a low BABIP for somebody who hits the ball as hard as he does, right?
Right. Well, last year he had a 24% line drive rate and a 35% hard contact rate. There's just no way, in my opinion, that it should be that low.
Gregory Polanco is a player I like a lot in theory. I just, when you're getting as expensive as he is right now, I want a little more than theory.
I kind of feel like we're close to a breakthrough though. Like you're thinking about putting Polanco ahead of Adam Jones. You're strongly considering it.
If, let's say I already have one outfielder and it gets to that point in the draft, I'm probably passing over Adam Jones for somebody else and then taking Gregory Polanco around later. Or
I would assume Polanco is being drafted much sooner.
All right, fine. I'm probably passing over them both then, because it's not that I'm excited to draft Adam Jones.
Yeah, here's the thing about Polanco. First 54 games, he had a 947 OPS. He had 7 steals. He had 9 home runs. His last 90 games, Polanco had a 685 OPS. He was playing with a hamstring injury. But the thing is, he had a hamstring injury, he had a shoulder injury. I don't know how long Polanco was playing hurt. I looked at the game log yesterday. He hurt his hamstring on July 8th. But he had already been slumping for a month at that point. So, you know, I don't know when the shoulder injury came into play. I'm not sure what it all means. If you just want to look at July 8th when he missed a few games with a leg injury, he had a 287, 362, 500 slash line with 12 home runs and 9 steals in 82 games. So that's basically 2020. He had 50 RBIs and 50 runs. So that's probably about 95 runs, 90 RBIs. If you just look at up to that point, Polanco had a huge year in half a season.
I will say, if Scott's ranking is this is what their value is, then I would agree with having Adam Jones ahead of Polanco. Polanco has a 6th round ADP, which I think is about right. Adam Jones is going in the 9th round.
That is pretty late. But I just see some serious signs of decline from Adam Jones. But okay, looking forward to the outfield preview. Last rankings dispute, and we'll finish the show with your emails. Justin Verlander. Scott has Verlander 6th. Heath has Verlander 11th in points, 17th in roto. I read Heath's regression story. Basically, he's too old. He can't do it again.
That was not what the regression story said.
it said like he just had his best season at age 33. Not happening again.
And it wasn't his best season ever. It was just his best season for like the last half of a decade.
Right.
He had a 3.49 FIP in 2015. He had a 3.48 FIP in 2016.
And a 3.04 ERA.
And a 3.04 ERA. I would expect he's going to have an ERA right around 3.4. I would expect that he's going to be more in the 2.10 range as far as innings pitched. Probably closer to a strikeout per inning as opposed to the 10K per nine he had last year. So Verlander's still a very good pitcher. That's not saying anything bad about him. I just don't think he matches what he did last year, since it's such an outlier of what Verlander had done the last 5.
Well, I will say this about Verlander. He is 34 now, but he started the season with a 6.49 ERA, and then in his first 5 starts. And then however many he made after that, probably 25 or so, he had a 2.42 ERA. He figured it out and pitched amazing. He had a core muscle injury in 2014. Verlander had a triceps injury in 2015. And And in 2015, his final 14 starts, and he only made 20 starts that year. He had a 2.27 ERA. And he started the season with a 6.62. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it was fairly legit. I give it, like, I can't imagine 17th, 16 pitchers ranked ahead of Verlander and Roto, and 11th in points for Heat. Scott has him 6th. All right, Scott, you can get your word in now. Sorry about that.
No, I mostly agree with you. Like, it was really a 3-year period where Verlander kind of went askew, and we were having trouble making sense of it that whole time. So in retrospect, I do think injuries is a good explanation, particularly that core muscle surgery he had. We saw the trouble Denard Span had coming back from that. It seems like Verlander just came back from it too soon. And yeah, we saw half a season's work in 2015. He really seemed to turn the corner and then took it to another level last year. I don't know that he can repeat 10 strikeouts per nine. I don't think it matters if he's throwing 220 innings. If his ratios are just good, like normal Verlander good, he's going to be an absolute stud. So I see less downside for him than, for Syndergaard, who has durability questions. For Arrieta, whose control went wrong last year for some reason. For a lot of the other pitchers, you could make an argument for in that 6th spot.
Okay. Let's read some emails. Yo, fire through them. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Doug in Connecticut. When you do your segment on late-round flyers, which will be right now, could you please weigh in on Ketel Marte? I'm thinking that the high, dry air and aggressive base-running philosophy in Arizona might work wonders on another shortstop again this year. Ketel Marte.
I like him.
You do?
I liked him going into last year. I think he's way too young to give up on. I think if you see what the Arizona Diamondbacks just did with Gene Segura last year, that's pretty encouraging.
Yeah, but I mean, Marte's just such a slap hitter. Like he's not going to surprise with the 20 homer season.
I don't think anybody thought Gene Segura was going to surprise with the 20 homer season.
He'd shown signs of that before. That one year early in his career, where he hit close to 15, I think. Marte, I'm not confident Marte will ever hit double digit home runs. He's just a slap hitter, and he needs to run a lot more to make the most of that profile. My biggest issue with Marte is I don't think he has a job. I think Chris Owings is the Diamondbacks' starting shortstop. I think Brandon Drury's their starting second baseman. And then, of course, Pollock's back in center. So I think Marte probably begins the year in the minors.
That is the concern. But I think it's important to say, like, that great power season that Segura had early in his career was a 129 ISO. Marte had a 119 ISO in half a season in 2015. So I don't see any reason that he can't hit 10 to 12 home runs someday. He's the speed, the batting average profile. In a really deep league, especially if he does some good things in spring, I could understand it.
Okay, that's Ketel Marte. This is an email that made me laugh for a couple of reasons. One, this is Justin from the town in Wisconsin, known for its high school swimming team. Like, that made me laugh. Like, I don't know that we're supposed to know that. But and he says, yo, Adam, yeah, you have the it factor. Also made me laugh. But I'm rethinking that since you and your gang failed to mention Eric Thames in your first base preview. Have you seen his projections? He's indubitably a sleeper, and I'm disappointed Chris and Heath completely forgot about him. Sad! With an exclamation point. Also made me laugh. I'll accept an apology on the air, please. Eric Thames, guys.
Well, he is not first base eligible.
Yeah, take that. No apology necessary, Justin.
But he will be a week into the season, so we should have at least mentioned him. I'm probably the lowest on him, so maybe Scott can. He hit the ball a long ways in Korea.
He did hit the ball a long ways in Korea, as Byung-ho Park also did. Now, Byung-ho Park had big strikeout issues that Thames didn't have in Korea, so maybe that's an unfair comparison. It's just we have so little sample of how those numbers translate to the majors. Jung-ho Gong has made, a very strong transition, so that's encouraging. But in Eric Thames' case, like...
It is Thames, my friend.
Eric Thames' case, sorry. I was kind of trying to split the difference.
I noticed.
Very mild sound. Eric Thames, the difference for Eric Thames from Jung Ho Kang is Eric Thames has been in the majors before. That's why he's outfield eligible. It's going back to his time with Seattle and Toronto. And he was a guy who swung and missed a lot and didn't. I mean, it was pretty good power hitter, but certainly not on the level we saw in Korea. So I think it might mostly be a matter. Look, there's a chance he changed something and had this breakout, but I think it's probably more a matter of him taking advantage of lesser competition. And beyond that, him being a left-handed hitter, very easy choice to platoon.
I will say he is going to play half of his games at Miller Park. So
good for lefties.
Yeah. I mean, he's a sleeper in the way, I guess, like David Peralta is a sleeper. Like,
Who would you rather take a shot on, Thames or Ulysses Guerrero?
Thames.
Yeah.
But
right. How about
just,
this?
I just see a lot of arguments against him too.
Who's a better dynasty pick, Will Myers or Alex Bregman?
Bregman, I think, is a higher probability player long term.
Yep.
All right. This is from Josh from Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. Dear Vic, Shane, Curtis, and Julian.
That's some Shield, the Shield.
Yeah, sure is. What is the deal with Raimel Tapia? Fangraphs Zips projection has him finishing fifth overall in hits and 24 steals, blah, blah, blah. I haven't heard Raimel Tapia's name on the podcast. That is a Rockies outfield prospect.
Cool little prospect. I think that if he emerges as a regular in the majors, which it doesn't seem like it'll happen this year because they've already had to bump Ian Desmond to first base and find a spot for Gerardo Parra and David Dahl, and it's just
that's his problem. He doesn't have a job.
But I think at Coors Field, with the kind of contact numbers he put up in the minors, the kind of batting average he put up in the minors, there may be a batting title in this guy's future someday.
Ooh.
But he doesn't walk.
I don't care.
That's inconsistent with the Scott White philosophy.
Yeah, this is like bizarro Scott White day.
I don't care. I mean, it's Coors Field, and this guy is just such a unique hitter. Like, here's one thing that always comes up in the scouting reports for Tapia. When he gets two strikes, he changes his stance. He goes into, like, this deep crouch so that he shrinks his strike zone. And that's partly what's contributing to these high batting averages. He's just not willing to give himself away when he has two strikes. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, next we've got Matt. He says, "Hey, Randy, Rob, and Norm, the Nasty Boys."
Oh yeah,
the Hodley brothers. Yeah. Every time I hear Christian Yelich's name, I cringe. Sorry, sometimes I make random references that only a few people are going to get, but you're all laughing if you get it. Every time I hear Christian Yelich's name, I cringe. Ouch. I drafted him as my second outfielder in a roto league in 2015 with big expectations, and I basically got Denard Span. Yelich had an interesting year last year, but I still don't trust him. What makes you confident he isn't pulling the same "fool you" that Lorenzo Cain did in 2015?
Well, I think we've been pretty negative about Yelich as a whole. I know Chris and I are...
Yeah, I haven't been.
Not buying the power breakthrough. What was that, Heath?
I have not been negative, and I don't think it's the power breakthrough so much as Lorenzo Cain was a 29-year-old that had struggled with injuries for most of his career and then struggled with injuries again last year. Christian Yelich is younger, has a better injury history. I think the chances of him happening to Cain last year happening to him are pretty slim.
Here's my concern about Yelich is he puts the ball in the air so infrequently that it just seems like it'd be hard to quite meet the 20 homer total last year. He was actually one of the very best in baseball in home run to fly ball percentage last year.
Oh, his home runs are going down next year.
Up there with a lot of 40 homer hitters, and he only hit 20. So, yeah, if that percentage normalizes... What are you talking about? You're talking about a dozen home runs, baby?
I'd expect 15 to 16 home runs. I'd expect a 300 average, because that's basically what he's been for 2 years now. A 300 hitter with 15 to 16 home runs and 80 or 90 runs in RBI, 10 to 15 stolen bases.
It's a starting outfielder in any format.
It's a number two outfielder.
But it's not what some people are paying for.
I anticipate, based on current average draft position, I will have zero Christian Yelich this year. I have very little interest in him.
He's going in the at the very end of the fifth round. Yeah, I'd prefer to take him in the sixth, but I think he belongs right there with Gregory Polanco.
No!
Yeah.
Polanco has so much more upside. Polanco could be better than him in every category except batting average.
He could be. He could also be worse than him in every
category. I would anticipate him being better than Yelich in every category except batting
average. I would definitely anticipate him being better than Yelich in stolen bases. Everything else, actually, I think, is questionable.
The more I was thinking about it, I thought maybe not the steals. But
Yelich didn't run much last year. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Polanco has a pretty bad stolen base percentage, I noticed. He is not good at that. Like, all of the guys, he didn't steal 30, but of all the players who stole 30 last year, only one, Travis Jankowski, had a lower percentage success rate than Gregory Polanco, which does make me wonder if he can steal 30.
I just wonder
about Jankowski, because that's all he does.
They're both a pair of 25-year-old outfielders that have had a lot of success already in the major leagues and have a very bright future.
And you know what? We have a bright future here on this podcast and on CBSSports.com, and we look forward to sharing that future with you, beginning on Monday with Outfield Part 1. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend. It's only a two-day weekend, but it should still be awesome. And we will talk to you on Monday. For Heath and Scott, I'm Adam. Chris will be back next week. See you then.